Alfred Molina, Willem Dafoe, or Jamie Foxx? Who are you most excited to reprise their role in Spider-Man No Way Home?
Oof.
Alfred Molina.
Same, actually.
I absolutely loved him coming back in as Doc Ock. Like, I'd forgotten how good he was. And then as soon as he came on screen, it was like, hello, Peter. And I was just like, yes.
Yes.
I forgot how good you were as Doc Ock.
Ashley has a very ponderous look on her face.
Sorry. I'm torn between Alfred Molina and Willem Dafoe. And I'm trying to decide if it's because of memes or not.
I mean, fair. Coming from you especially, that's not shocking.
Because I really enjoyed both of their performances. I like Jamie Foxx a lot. I don't like that character generally, and I don't find him very interesting. Even from a comic book perspective, I'm just like, I could hit snooze on this dude, but I might go with. Shoot, every time I think I've made a decision, then I start second guessing that decision. But I think I might go with Alfred Molina as well. But not, because I think he and Willem Dafoe are equally great actors. And I think they acted the crap out of their roles in this last Spider-Man. I think and people are going to hate this and they're going to groan, but I think I have more nostalgia for Doc Ock as a villain, a Spider-Man villain overall.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know a ton about Green Goblin until the first trilogy had come out. And I was like, yeah, I mean, like, I knew he existed. I knew who he was. But I, like, didn't know a ton about him. Whereas I feel like even as a kid, I know who Doc Ock was and what he was about. It's kind of hard to ignore.
Yeah.
And I think that whole fight scene on the train is also, like, a whole big influential part of my comic book journey. So, yeah, I think I'm going to go with Alfred Molina.
Kyle, what about you? Why Doc Ock?
Largely the same kind of reasons that you guys have cited. I remember, actually, I went back and I watched the Tobey Maguire trilogy when I was in seminary, I think. I think I was just, like, feeling sick one day. Mm-hmm. And so I was just lying in my room and I watched through all three movies again. And I, like, after watching the second one, I was like, man, this was just so good. Like, even in the world, the age of the MCU, I'm like, this actually really holds water.
Yeah.
And Molina as Doc Ock is just fantastic.
Yeah.
I loved it. And I like the accessibility of his character in that film. And I like that they brought that full circle in this film, right? Because he's not, like, his motivations are different than most villains in most cases, right? Like, he was never actually motivated to be a villain until the AI and the tentacles took over, right? And that was kind of an interesting, like, piece of his character, I guess, that, you know, was just unique. He wasn't like power hungry. He was a scientist who was in it for the science and stayed in it for the science until something went wrong and he kind of lost the ability to have that choice, right? And I thought that was a compelling way to do that character. So I really loved to see that come full circle then, and to see Peter One turn around, fix the inhibitor chip, and then, hey, he, like, helps out in the end. Like, that moment when he grabs Electro and you're like, oh, come on, dude. And then he just, like, plucks the arc reactor off of him and you're like, oh, yes, this is great. This is fantastic. And then he, like, catches the batarangs and stuff, or not batarangs, wrong universe. the other things, the little goblin spinny things that are basically batarangs. I know what I'm about. I'm a well-educated nerd who knows my franchises.
Yeah, no, it is hard to tell the difference between computer rabies and justice. I get that.
Hello, Mampersons. This is episode 207 of the Min-Max Podcast. Happy New Year. Hope this finds you all well. Patreons, if you haven't already, and people who've been thinking about Patreon possibly in the new year, there's a special episode waiting for you in that newsfeed. You should go check that out. We recorded a special thing. Patreons, you can, or if you're interested in doing Patreon, you can check the show notes below. I'm gesturing to the show notes like,
I was
you,
gonna say,
like the podcast listeners can see, me.
Yeah, babe, we don't do video. We were not made for video.
This week, if you can't guess, we are talking the Spider-Verse, the Spider-Man, men, and
this,
all the Spideys.
Weird?
All the Spideys. So, if you have not seen the newest Spider-Man, No Way Home, you should probably stop listening right about now, because...
Honestly, you probably should have stopped listening.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, this is like the case where we probably should have thrown the spoiler.
Oops, all spoilers.
We definitely are going to spoil everything in this, including the biggest moments. So, I guess we haven't said anything that wasn't in the trailer already. That's our saving grace. We haven't said anything that wasn't in the trailer.
Now I'm
nope, you committed.
I didn't commit to anything. I didn't take a vow of Doc Ock. I just, there's something that Willem Dafoe does with his, like, the curling of his mouth. Like, he is like a living Grinch with what he's able to do with his facial features. And there's something that changes in his eyes when he turns into the Green Goblin. There's just, that's so, it's so good.
No, he's an excellent character actor. Like, he absolutely, like, he plays two characters, and it's, he does it brilliantly. Like, the shift from Osborn to the Green Goblin, like, when that persona takes over, it is very clear who is driving the body.
Yeah, well, and I kind of loved how when Green Goblin takes over, and I almost just Tom Holland, when Peter Parker is experiencing that sort of like tunnel vision, Spidey sense anxiety, and he's trying to figure out where the threat is.
That was a good moment.
Yeah, such a great demonstration of what anxiety feels like. And then you realize that Osborn is switched. And Aunt May runs with I'm spacing.
The serum.
Thank you. With the serum.
Yeah.
Then it like suddenly shifts into a horror film. And that was so like so seamlessly done, how we transitioned genre suddenly.
Yep.
And it was really terrifying. I think the reason I was having trouble deciding who I preferred was because I remember, as much as I like the original trilogy that had come out, I remember not ever really being particularly terrified of Green Goblin. It's just like, oh, he's just kind of goofy and he laughs a lot. Like,
yeah,
great. He's on like a hoverboard. I don't really care. He's got a son that's got issues. Maybe that's why. Maybe it's just because he's a bad dad that I just really don't give a crap about him. Mm. But in this film, I suddenly was terrified of this villain, and I feel like I had reason to be terrified of him.
Yeah, well, and I think one of the things that they did really, really right, and I think in a way this is hardcore fan service because of how much everybody just ragged on the mask, right? Like, all along.
Sure.
Like, everybody hated on that Green Goblin mask from day one.
Sure.
Which, I'm like, I don't care, guys. Like, it's not that big a deal. But
right.
I think the interesting thing about Green Goblin as a character, like, even from a comic book perspective, or one of the kind of spoopier things that works for that character, is because you can get these really kind of insane, almost like Joker-esque facial expressions,
oh, true.
Right? Where he's got the, like, the natural deformity of the face kind of thing going on, that I think this film really lent itself to better, because he smashes the mask.
Yeah.
So you actually get to see his facial expressions,
true.
And he can, like, over-exaggerate those in a way that's actually, like, oh, that's horrifying.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like just hearing the cackle when all you see is this like blank plastic mask.
Yeah.
Isn't as intimidating as hearing the cackle and seeing just the crazed look in his eyes at the same time. Right. Like that's a totally different experience.
Defoe's like facial control. Like there are only a handful of actors that really can like change that much. Like everything from brow pressure to like, for lack of better term, the amount of crazy that comes through in the eyes at any given moment. Like, he, like, when he flips the corners of his mouth, when he applies more brow pressure, when suddenly he lets extra light into his, like, it is very clear that the split in the personality has taken over. And I think they did a really good job. And maybe this is just 20 years later in cinema, or 15 years later in cinema, whatever, however long we've been since he was in last. It's allowed us to have a bigger, because they didn't shy away from the fact that he's not mentally well. Like, obviously,
right.
All joking aside, like, Osborne is having like a schizophrenic episode, and they, in a brilliant fashion, they use May in a way to say, no, this is what you do, Peter. You have a gift. You help people. It doesn't matter what they're doing or who they're hurting. Like, you do your best to help them. And we'll come back to that, because then she says the line, and at that moment, I gripped Ashley's hand very tightly because I was like, no.
That hit, and then it hit all over again on the rooftop, like, so much harder. Oh.
Yeah. But we get May, who's saying, is like, no, he's not well.
Yeah.
Right.
So help him. And that is your job above all things. It's not to stay safe. It's not to keep people safe. It's not to be the hero. It's to help people no matter what the cost. And like, for all we say, or for all the fun that Spider-Man is in the movie was, like, that is one of those notes that hits. And especially like for the theme of our podcast, like, that's a thing that hits. Like, you help people. Like, we, like, our faith is something that it's not always easy. It means being sacrificial. It means you're going to do the thing that is not easy and it's not going to be understood, and that's okay, but that's the job.
Yeah.
That's what we signed up for. This is what living out your faith looks like. I don't want to Jesus juke too hard here, but it definitely...
We're a Christian podcast. I think we're allowed to Jesus juke as much as we want. People knew what they signed up for.
Yeah, it just, especially in that moment, like, that hit, and it was just like, ooh, thank you, May. May be preaching. Shout that message. Okay, so.
And I'll add to that just real quick. The one thing, like, at first, that part didn't quite land for me because it had a little bit of a, like, Salvation Complex ring to it for a second, like, where it almost just kind of felt like, is it your job to, like, save these people? Like,
oh, sure. Okay.
I don't know. You know, like, it felt slightly distorted there for a moment. But then I think, especially when you get all three Peters and they're like, you know, when Tobey Maguire is like, no, actually, I've been thinking about how I could have cured Norman for years. Like, this bugged me, right? Like, this is how I could have helped him. And then Andrew Garfield's like, oh yeah, I already cured Lizard once. Like, I got this, guys. And I think that's also where having Sandman in the film was an excellent addition, because he was another one of those who, like, actively wasn't against Peter by the end of Spider-Man 3, right? Like, he had his issues, but then they kind of resolved it towards the end there. And it was just like, I just want to get back to my daughter kind of thing.
Right.
And so I think his character being integrated in the way that it was really, really powerful and effective too, because it was a way for that to land a little bit better in terms of, you know, like, oh, we know, like, this is what he wants, right? Like, he wants to be able to get back to his daughter. And so curing him of this, like, strange, I don't even know what to call it, right? He got turned into sand. It's not like a disease. It's like a weird metaphysics problem, but...
I don't know, Kyle. You seem to be getting a little granular there.
Oh, get out.
No. I mean, it's been a while since we've had one of those. No.
Get out.
Your fired after you edit this episode.
You're sleeping on the futon tonight, and I'm going right. to lock the door.
Yeah, so at first that part didn't quite work for me until I saw where they were going to take it, and then I really appreciated it. And I think really getting that moment with Doc Ock too was very, very helpful, because it's like, oh no, like we just needed to fix this chip, and then you're back in control of your own mind. And I think that was a good demonstration of like what they actually meant by it. It was just one of those like red flag moments when they first said, like, sure. Well, we're going to save them. We're going to fix them. And I'm like, that from a psychology standpoint, from a care profession standpoint, can get really twisted real quick. Right. And so that just like was an instant red flag for me. And so I liked the way that they brought it back around.
Yeah. Well, I do wonder how many, I didn't go fishing for this, but now that you're saying that, I do wonder how many like bad youth group sermons people have now experienced because of this movie.
Yep.
You are your brother's keeper.
See, the thing that ran on my mind is I want to know how many people tried to do that and then played some sort of instrumental version of Coldplay's Fix You while they were preaching that sermon. Tell me that somewhere, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but especially after the first or second one when things were going really well, all I heard in the background of my mind was, I will fix you. Completely off key there, but that's fine.
Friends, I'm just here to tell you, you're not broken. Because Christ has already fixed you on the cross.
Oh, goodness. Okay, so obviously... Yelp.
Together our jagged edges make a beautiful mosaic of the kingdom of God.
I can't physically throw up in my mouth.
We're all starfish, and
where is this going?
Sandman will provide the sands,
what?
And we will throw them back one at a time.
That doesn't make any sense.
It mattered that to that just, one.
Be the lizards just, you wish to see in the world, fam. Which for this one guy was a lot.
We are actively out of control now. This has gone way too far.
So obviously we loved all of the villains coming into the mix. Definitely as soon as we got on the bridge and as soon as it started happening, I was like, yes, all of the yes. I was so very happy. I want to circle back real quick just to kind of zooming in on Peter 1 for a second. We'll get to that in a second. Obviously, I love that we picked right up from the very end of the last movie.
Right.
Like, I just absolutely love that. And then that he and MJ and Ned trying to figure out, oh, crap, what the heck do we do? Mm-hmm. How do we function? He's known. How do we do? And I kind of love the dynamic that set up. I also still want to circle back to something that will link the previous episode in the show notes. We had a lot of predictions on this episode or on this movie. We did a whole episode on it. We did not get a conclusive reasoning as to why Stephen Strange is acting so weird and loosey-goosey with time. We did not get a compelling resolution to that. At least for me. I don't know about you guys.
The dynamic with him and Wong was so weirdly tense, and I couldn't tell if it was because he was bouncing back to some other situation he was dealing with that he was stressed out about, but like he wasn't even giving him eye contact, really. Like, it was just a weird moment where he bounced, he's like, just like, take care of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And that felt intentional. It didn't feel like a weird sort of like, I'm overthinking the scene. It was like, that's weird that they wouldn't have directed him to look in the eyes of his
right.
scene partner.
Right, well, and it felt very flippant that they were like, yeah, he's the Sorcerer Supreme on a technicality now, like, because I blipped for 5 years. Like, yeah, right. Sure. That kind of makes sense, but why would he not just give it back to you when you came back?
Exactly.
You also, know? Why are you still rocking the stone?
I was more concerned why he was wearing sweatpants. But yeah, the stone. What's up with that?
Look, Sorcerer Supreme, well, they guard the time stone. Why is Steven still carrying the time stone?
I mean, he's not. He's carrying the Eye of Agamotto, which theoretically doesn't contain the time stone anymore. But
fair. Okay, fair. Technicality.
If you want to get technical fair. About it, yeah. Fair. But yeah, I I'm really curious because we have a couple pieces of Wong doing things now because he was also with Abomination in the fighting ring in Shang-Chi.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Like, he's out there, like, doing stuff. So why is the Sorcerer Supreme over here, like...
Yeah, why does he keep leaving?
Coaching Abomination in a fight ring. Like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's doing some sketchy-ish.
Yeah. So there's definitely pieces to be found and deciphered and discovered.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. Just that whole the whole tone of the manor feels very off. And who the crap were those two millennials sweeping the floor in the corner?
Right? Just two random people shoveling snow.
Don't mind them. They're the interns.
Who are right? they?
And then Wong just walks in. He's like, nobody told you to stop. Like, those right. poor guys, or guy and girl, they're just like, okay.
Yeah, it that was straight up, like, the most unpaid intern thing I have ever, like, witnessed. It was just in right. the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It was like, yeah, no, they're not getting coffee, they're sweeping. Like, that's what they're doing.
Oh, not to mention that they, like, disregard Peter, and then they, when they suddenly pay attention to him, it's just like, both stop at the same time, both lock their focus on him. And then don't stop being focused on him, right? Until Wong says something. And it's like, that's super normal and not strange at all.
Yeah.
Do you think they might be two more of the aliens?
Two more of the aliens.
From?
Skrulls?
Yeah.
That's possible.
I guess it's possible, but that feels weird to not reveal at some point. Because it's not like... they're particularly striking or memorable.
Sure.
Like, I can remember kind of generally what they were wearing and that it was a guy and a girl, but I wouldn't have been able to pick them out in a lineup of extras.
That's fair.
And also, why the whole snowstorm thing, right?
Yeah.
Like, that didn't serve any purpose for the broader narrative of the story. Like, yeah, sure, it was, like, sort of a laugh line, but it wasn't even really,
they were taking
like,
it too seriously, though.
Yeah, it was just like thrown out there as like, yep, this is a thing. And it's like, it doesn't contribute to the story in any meaningful way. It doesn't, like, why would you go to the effort of creating a scene and having to, like, stage all of this and have all of this set up just for, like, it's not even for a laugh, really. Like, it's right. not particularly funny. It's sort of noteworthy,
yeah.
but it's just, like, weird. So mm-hmm. I'm like, there's...
And
many pieces to that scene.
I'm trying to place this in, like, timeline of release of other movies, too, to where snow is in context to whether or not they could be hinting at something that we don't know. Obviously, Black Widow, we get a lot of Russia and a lot of snow there. But
that's true, but that takes place before Infinity War.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Which, if Steven's playing loosey-goosey on time...
But, like, why bring her back?
I don't.
It's not like they were tight.
I don't know. I'm trying to flesh this out because obviously there was
right.
snow in Hawkeye because it was winter in the middle of Times Square.
He saves him from the tree.
Steven's actually the owl. Like, Steven was the owl.
He would be.
Like, I'm just trying to think of different ways, especially with the introduction. Like, we're going all over the MCU, guys. Just hang tight. This is one of those movies.
Yeah, so if you haven't watched, like, literally everything up to date, you should probably have stopped listening again 5 minutes ago.
But I'm trying to think, like, with the surprise introduction in Hawkeye and in Spider-Man of... Daredevil and
Kingpin.
Thank you. I was gonna say Big Boss, but I was like, nope, that's kind of right, but not fully right.
Conceptually, it's right.
I mean, he does his best Boss Hog impression, but it's definitely not him. But with the introduction of that, and there being snow there, like, I'm trying to figure out, like,
yeah,
okay,
they
what
live
could...
in the world. Snow happens a lot of places.
I'm aware, but things happen for a reason in the MCU.
But I feel like we saw the background of where Wong was going, and there was no, like, civilization.
Sure. And maybe this is just a nod for Madness. So...
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, which I mean, then... I feel like it's certainly setting up something.
Yeah. Well, and maybe that's it then. Maybe with time being such a weird issue, this is Wong having seen a bunch of stuff time-wise where what he's witnessed is out of joint with, and he's seen well beyond, so he knows what Strange is gonna do, and he's cleaning up those future messes or something, and that's why he's like all weird with Strange.
But I don't think that works, though, because I don't think it can be a time issue, because there's no time stone. Like, the time stone is destroyed at this point. Or,
yeah,
well, the time stone's been returned to... Or, what? No, wait.
Yeah.
Wait, because... Well, okay. Because in a linear progression,
it's
Bruce
back
goes
in the
back
world.
In time and gets it from... The Ancient One.
Yep.
She gives it to him. So then Cap goes back in time and gives it back to her at the end of the film.
Which
but
means
then
fast
she
forward
still
to
gives
present
it to Strange,
day.
Which means Strange still has... So does Strange still have it? Does he?
Another...
Yeah, sorry, I'm just now catching
up,
guys.
Strange, maybe? Which is kind of what we got in What If, which was a crap show, but we can talk about that.
Well, I mean, frankly, it's what we got in the end of Endgame with Cap. There is a big, wide open question of, like, what reality are we in?
Right. Well, and even the trailer in the end credits opens that question, mm-hmm. because Strange runs into himself.
Yeah.
Right? So they're okay. Well, never mind. I recant my previous statement.
I
was
going to say, did we do like an FBI bag drop thing. Where they, oops, we both set down our stones and we picked up the wrong one and we get this weird kind of buddy cop situation that
super
happened.
Super weird. Oh no, we both picked up a very similar cosmic power from the origins of the universe.
Oops, all powers.
Yours is a slightly lighter shade of green than mine is. Oh no.
So let's stop talking around the thing. How about when Ned starts searching for Peter Parker and we got the shot in the alley? Did your guys' heart stop as fast as mine did?
Oh, 100%.
Gosh, I was so
happy. That was
happy.
Not the way I anticipated that happening, but it was so good.
Yeah, as soon as he turns around and he walks toward, and you start to see how tall he is, I was like, that's Andrew Garfield. That's Andrew Garfield. We're getting it.
Yeah.
We're getting
he
it.
Hops, he hops through the portal and then whips his mask off, and you're just like, and that's like, this is just random aside, my favorite thing about going to MCU movies mm-hmm. on release weekend.
Everyone cheering
because
and screaming.
Stuff like that happens, and everybody loses their minds.
Yes.
And it's like I've realized this because this has happened a few times now where I would go like on release weekend and then go like the following weekend.
Yeah.
And it's completely different experience, right? You go the following weekend and there's like no energy in the theater.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, that communal energy mm-hmm. is itself an experience when it comes
is.
To the MCU specifically.
Yep.
It is.
And like just getting to be present for that is an incredible feeling.
Mm-hmm. Man. Yeah. Yeah. It's incredibly validating.
Right?
And for someone who really liked Garfield as Spider-Man, it was really validating to see how many other people really enjoyed him to have him come back.
Also, it did not right. hurt that Andrew Garfield acted the crap out of that role. Like,
oh my gosh, he was
he
so good
was
in this movie.
So good. Like, admittedly, like in the previous episode we talked about, I have not been the biggest fan of Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man.
Yep.
I always preferred Andrew Garfield's prior to Tom Holland. Like, we all agree, like, Tom Holland is the best of the three. But of the other two...
I feel like he's the best at blending Peter Parker and Spider-Man.
Correct.
As, like, one yeah. unit.
Yeah, and I think where we previously landed is that Tobey Maguire was a better Peter Parker, Andrew Garfield was a better Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But to see, I appreciated the different dynamics that we got, and only to find out that actually the writers let Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield give some character context and help rewrite portions based on their own experiences. And like, you could almost feel Andrew Garfield working out his issues with Sony and the MCU on screen when he's talking about like having gotten bitter as Spider-Man. And at some point I stopped pulling my punches. Like, oh, I loved how much they were getting into the difficulty that is being that friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and I loved that. I think for me, and I mean, this was kind of the quick back and forth that we had, you know, when we were just texting after we'd all seen the movie, was for me, it completely redeemed everything about Andrew Garfield as a Spider-Man character, right? Mm-hmm. As a Spider-Man actor. And I think the biggest thing about that is it stopped feeling like it was trying to replace the Spider-Man that I had always known, right? Because up to this point, I think there's been this sort of supersessionistic view of a lot of these superhero films, right?
Yeah.
Like, look at Batman. Every Batman film is just erasing the previous set of Batman films and trying to do it better or trying to do it their way, right?
Correct. Yeah.
It's exactly what I hate about new Star Wars.
Mm.
Not going there, but... But that's what I loved about this, because it took everything that we all loved about the previous Spider-Man films and brought them together and not only balanced them, but also honored and respected what had been done in the past. Right. Yeah. And I think that was a really phenomenal thing about this, because for me, then I can look at Andrew Garfield and yes, he like mind-blowingly good. Like he acted, like you said, Alan, he acted the crap out of that role in this film. He was incredible. And so that alone probably would have sold me on like, no, he's a really good Spider-Man. But yeah, I think being able to bring them all together and to be able to embrace the differences between them all and still say, nope, we're all still Spider-Man at the end of the day.
Yeah.
That was fantastic for me, right? Because I think that's what I think really speaks to, like, that's what good fan service looks like to me, right? Yeah. Where you say, yes, I know, we know that some of you guys loved all of these things. So we're going to take all of the things that you loved about all of these things and bring them together in like this perfect union of a film.
Yeah. When you can't do that with Batman, you can't have a room full of Batman.
Right. It doesn't work.
They just won't work together. They'll all be suspicious of one another. They'll duke it out.
They'll all be dark and brooding in their own
corners.
I was going
to say, they'll take out their family aggression on one another. Then only one will survive. And then Joker will be like, I told you you're just like me.
Pretty much.
Yeah. It's just not the same. But with Spider-Man, like they're all saying, well, this is what we do, you know? And the fact that I like the fact that they went through the growing pains of not knowing how to work together, but then very quickly figuring out how to work together.
Oh, the moment when they're all like swinging and they like finally figure it out and they start like cartwheeling around each other and like whipping off of each other.
Yep.
Oh, so good. Have you guys read the Spider-Men comic book?
No.
No.
Where the original, is it 616 or 616?
Yeah, I think that's right.
So original Peter Parker, right? Okay. Like classic Peter Parker meets the Ultimate Universe Peter Parker, and they work together in like this whole like mix. It's actually part of what ends up leading to, like, it's integrated into the whole death of Peter Parker in the Ultimates universe that ties into Miles Morales' origins.
Okay.
Basically.
Got it.
They're all like kind of linked together. But that, like, read that comic book sometime or that series because it is everything that this film does, but just with Ultimates universe Peter Parker and original universe Peter Parker, and it's so good. Yeah, no, it's incredible.
Yeah, I think the moments of, and maybe I want to hone in on this one too, because obviously it's such a powerful moment, because while we danced around earlier is obviously Green Goblin kills Aunt May, or causes the building to collapse, which kills Aunt May.
Well, he kills Aunt May. He does it very intentionally, knowing what it could do.
Yeah. And when we get Peter on the roof and then the other Spideys come in and talk about the grief, it's a very similar moment that we got in Into the Spider-Verse with everyone talking about, no, Miles, we're the only people that are going to understand what you're going through.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you get Tobey Maguire, who's just like, yeah, I kept doing this. We got separated. We managed to figure it out, but I was angry for a long time. Mm-hmm. And then you get Garfield, who's still very much in it, much younger. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, oh no, I turned to rage. And I just stopped pulling punches. And it's just like, whew. And then you get Holland, who's sitting there like in the midst of this. And obviously we get the payoff of this at the end of the movie of actively in the post-death of the immortal line reader. And then having those Spideys stop him from going through with trying to do it.
I loved that it was specifically Tobey Maguire.
Yeah.
Because like the fact that he just didn't have to say anything, like he was very much in that moment, old man Peter.
Yeah.
In Spider-Verse, right? Like, and he didn't have to say anything. He just looked him in the eye. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, nope, you know this. You know what's about to happen here. Like, cool off. Calm down, you know? And it, like, he doesn't even have to say anything. Mm-hmm. And Spidey One is just like, oh, dang it.
Yeah.
And then to have I think they lined that up perfectly, because then to have Andrew Garfield throw him the serum and him, you know, turn around and just whip it into Goblin's neck, I was like, that fit each of them to a T.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, that was exactly how that was gonna go down.
Yeah, which I think is really impressive of the screenwriters for this film, that they clearly did their homework in really getting to know each of them and what each brought to the table, despite any script writing flaws in the previous trilogies, especially I think with Garfield. Because I think the issue with Garfield's Spider-Man isn't Garfield. I think it's the script writing. Because you look at some of the source material that they pulled from, Spider-Man, you know, Peter Parker, there are moments where he is very suave and he is actually very, very like classically cool. He's hitting on women all the time and he's successful. So he's not always nerdy. So I think they did that, but they didn't make him as empathetic as he needed to be until the very end, when it was almost too late and people were tired of it. But that wasn't Garfield's fault. Garfield, as we've seen in so many roles, but especially this one, as you've said, Alan, as we've kind of said ad nauseum, is he acts the crap out of him. And if you still don't get what he brings to the table, watch Tick, Tick, Boom.
Oh, my gosh. Tick, Tick, Boom will make you cry, especially if you've got a musical theater bone in your body.
If you've ever had a dream, but now you're old, watch Tick, Tick, Boom.
It will give you energy. 100% will give you energy.
It'll convict your spirit.
One thing that I do want to highlight here that maybe we can theorycraft a little, because it is an open hook, is the introduction to the fact that the MJ in question in Tom Holland's universe is not in fact Mary Jane. Mm-hmm. Which very clearly sets up the fact that we have three completely separate universes again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much you guys have been seeing on the interwebs and things, but are you guys seeing the rumbles that Sony and Andrew Garfield may be in talks to do a third?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that would be justice served.
I think it would too. Like, I would actually, especially with the teaser at the end with Venom and us having no idea what universe or where in the time frame that's happening.
What the crap are they going to do with Venom at this point? I don't think
they're going to do anything with him is the thing, because he goes back to his universe, right? Except, like, I think it was just
he
a
leaves
setup.
A portion of himself.
That poor bartender is going to have a real bad day.
Right. the bartender's poor guy. But here's the thing, and this, because this will really rub me the wrong way if the MCU does this. I don't need R-rated Marvel movies. No. I haven't watched the Venom movies. I'm not interested. I'm not into it. I don't want to see that in the MCU. Like, I'm sorry. I get that that's my personal opinion and not everybody else's. I just don't want to see that, right? Like, that'll really trash the MCU for me if that's the direction that they decide to take. So, like, I didn't even recognize him at first. Like, I was really confused in the first part of that scene. And then when the Venom voice kicked in, I was like, oh.
See, Venom was fun. Like, the first one's fun. Like, they don't go too, like, it's violent, but it's no worse than anything in the MCU. They do a nice job of not making it overly grotesque.
Sure.
It's properly grotesque, but not overly grotesque. Yeah, I'll be curious. But yeah, it's I will be really interested to see, because I know that Sony has kind of said, like, obviously, Marvel doesn't own it. They own Spider-Man. And that partnership has come to a, or at least that segment of the partnership has come to an end. But with as successful as that has been, you gotta think, and especially with them releasing a press release not very long after the movie was released, saying that any future Spider-Man movies are not going to attempt to, like, outdo this spectacle that was Tom Holland's No Way Home trilogy, but they intend to, that they intend to tell different, more interesting stories. Like, that's a line, I believe, straight out of the press release. So sure. It's like, interesting. So they're already thinking about this. And there's only one other, well, there are two other known Spideys in the universe that we know, in fact, exist. And I love the fact that we got, there has to be a Black Spider-Man out there somewhere. I know Ashley and I both, like, jumped in our seats, like, yes!
Right.
Be so
yeah, cool. When we talked about this off air too, right? That, like, and yes, it probably would have been too much for this film to introduce Miles Morales straight up, but they've hinted at it in the previous Tom Holland films already. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think a lot of people are clamoring for it, or maybe I'm projecting and I'm just really excited about that idea. But I'm also thinking, probably because of Into the Spider-Verse, they're not going to do that, because that's kind of like the Sony only corner, you know, like, that's one of the things that Sony can kind of hold on to.
Like, maybe their hearts as a corporation will grow 3 sizes.
maybe.
I believe in miracles. I'm a Christian.
That's fair. I like, yes. Would it be amazing to have a live action Miles Morales? Absolutely. Someday hope we get it. But at the same time, are we really complaining that Spider-Verse is a thing?
No, it's so good.
It is also an exceptionally amazing movie, right? The second one's going to be great.
But also, why not both?
You're not wrong. I'm just speculating as to why it might not happen immediately, and trying to keep our hopes contained in a way so as not to be immediately dashed. That's all.
Fine. Voice of reason, as always. Okay, this was a trailer prior to the film's beginning, but what do we think of Morbius, the Jared Leto?
I don't know why Marvel keeps selling their characters at this point, frankly. Like, why, guys? You have, like, the most incredibly successful film franchise ever, and you're still giving other companies your characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why is that not just an MCU film?
Right.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the extent of my thoughts. Like, Morbius is an interesting character, don't get me wrong. I don't expect another studio to do it that well.
No,
just don't. And frankly, like, I think Jared Leto is a good actor. I'm
not interested in seeing him as a hero, though. Anti-hero, rather.
Like, I have absolutely no desire. Like, I don't know. I don't know if it's just some of the antics that have come out as he's done other films and things.
Well,
I just,
it also strangely gave me League of Extraordinary Gentlemen vibes as far as, like, tone and quality.
See, for me, it almost just felt like an extension of his character from Blade Runner 2049.
Oh yeah,
like, it didn't feel any different.
That's a good point. I hadn't connected those.
It's like, oh, okay, so you're not a doctor this time. You're just a different form of scientist.
He's a doctor.
I'm being facetious. So in 2049, he wasn't. He was just a rich dude that was paying scientists to make him immortal.
Sure. No, I get that. I thought you were saying that Morbius.
No, not Morbius. So it didn't feel different enough. It was like, oh, this is the same note. Like, this feels exactly like the character from 2049.
Yeah.
And that, I don't know, Jared Leto's, I've never been particularly compelled by him in superhero movies.
His face doesn't do interesting things. I like people whose faces do interesting things. His does not.
I don't know. Yeah, that's about where I'm at with Morbius. Like, if it gets rated really, really highly, fine, I'll see it. But it's one I could probably sleep on until it came out on whatever streaming platform it's going to come out on.
Yeah, I won't be clamoring to see that one. I was just surprised by that. I mean, I wasn't surprised that they advertised it for a Spider-Man film because he was a Spider-Man character originally. But I was curious to hear your thoughts as far as like the character getting their own franchise as is. But I don't anticipate it'll be. I'm happy to be wrong because I like you. I liked the first Venom film well enough. It's not like amazing, but I like
Tom Hardy,
and I think he does a great job. We haven't seen the second one.
Yeah.
And it wasn't nearly as grotesque as I was expecting it to be. But yeah, Morbius, I'm just not compelled by.
Yeah, it's not one that I'm particularly thrilled to see.
He's a great character in the 90s animated Spider-Man, but that's about the extent of my interest in that character. So
right, exactly. And let's be honest, everything was great in the 90s.
Sure.
Are there any other thoughts that we want to hit on for No Way Home?
Well, it's not a No Way Home thought, but I'm really trying to figure out if Ashley is only friends with me because my face does interesting things, and then if so, what interesting things does my face do?
It's your thinking face, I think, that really does it. Like, that's a man who doesn't just think, he ponders.
Oh, okay. Well, I can live with that. Mm-hmm. Good to know, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting foundation for our friendship. I will keep that in mind.
Just saying, now that I'm thinking about it, now that I'm pondering this, all of my friends have interesting faces that do interesting things. Not that I like vet my friends based on beauty standards or anything. You have to be relatively interesting to stay in my company. But yeah. Just animated. You have to demonstrate that you are in fact living this life and not just coasting.
Well, all
right, fair enough.
If we have no further thoughts, I would say
I have a quick question. Okay. Because so like the world has forgotten.
No, they never are. I have a quick question introduces another 20-minute segment of the conversation.
So
don't even start.
So the world has forgotten who Peter Parker is.
Correct.
Oh yeah, this not. But, this is going to be fun.
But documents still exist. It's not like documents forget who Peter Parker is. This is people have.
We don't know.
There's a paper trail somewhere.
We don't know the specifics of the spell and how in depth the
wording
goes. They said, the erasing.
Everyone forgets who I am. Not.
Which, see,
evidence
but I think,
disappears.
I think that's a thing that they ultimately kind of have to deal with, if not in Doctor Strange, then in the next Spider-Man, because the reality is, so what do Ned and MJ think?
Right.
They're just standing in the rubble of the Statue of Liberty. Right. Are they like, we're just here helping Spider-Man. Why the hell are we helping Spider-Man?
Right,
who is Spider-Man
exactly.
to us? Right?
Yeah.
And same thing with Doctor Strange, right? Like, he comes out of casting the spell and he's just hovering there over the Statue of Liberty. And you're like, does he remember? Does he remember everything that just happened? And the only detail that's missing is that he knows Spider-Man's real name.
Yeah.
Or is the whole thing just like a blank? Is he just sitting there going, why, what? What am I doing here? Why is there a shield laying in the water next to the Statue of Liberty? Where are these kids over here?
Well, in any sort of like records of the Parkers and their family line, anything, like
right.
his parent, like, did they, there's nothing at all. No records. It's just like a blank spot where people see that. And it's like, they just ignore the fact that there's a blank spot.
They may not even know that it exists. Like, it may be essentially an illusory spell or illusion spell. And
it's like blocking someone online.
Pretty much.
Like a, or like a perception filter. Take this full Doctor Who style.
Yeah.
Where it's
the magic of the spell just sort of compensates, right? Like, yes, now there are random inconsistencies in this universe, and I'm just going to magically redirect people's attention away from them.
Yeah. Ugh. We had happened to see this film right after I had created forms for a lot of different ministries. So I was thinking about forms a lot. And I was like, okay, what about like a driver's license or even a bus pass? Like, can he even use his name? Does he have a social security card?
I mean, those are all very valid questions. Obviously, we see that he's not going back to high school. He's doing a GED.
Right.
So, yeah, it's you raise an interesting point. I don't know that we have a good answer to that.
Yep.
Does he take on an alias?
Pretty much.
Spider-Man. He already has an alias.
Imagine that on a driver's license.
And here's the thing. Peter Parker can still exist. It just doesn't necessarily mean anything to anybody.
Right.
Right? Like, I don't know. I don't know how that all pans out.
I just need Doctor Strange did not define his terms. That's the problem I have. He did not define, he did not take the time in the midst of that chaos to explain to the audience the exact parameters of the spell.
True. Though, to be fair, Peter Parker is not the would not be the only Peter Parker that exists in the world. People just forgot that Spider-Man is Peter Parker. And that
is not what he said.
I am aware, but there were also lots of bad castings of that spell that cracked loose.
I mean, let's face it. Multiverse of Madness is very clearly going to, like... Because this is like the fourth time now that they're like, oh, the multiverse is cracking wide open. Like, WandaVision tried to do it.
They have created, they have birthed the multiverse of madness within me. This is it. Yeah. This is what the film will be.
Yes, pretty much. It's just like nothing makes sense anymore.
I will be interested to see how this ties in with like WandaVision and everything else. Like, the cracking of the worlds. Like, I'm really curious to see how that is going to play out.
Which, like, poor Wanda. Steven's going to come up to her. She's like, no, look, I get it. I accidentally took over a town. And he's like, oh, no, I screwed up real big. And she's like, are you kidding me?
I accidentally broke the world.
Are you kidding me? Sword came after me. I took over a town in my grief, on accident. They came after me. I had to leave. I had to go to another country. But you get to still... inhabit your space, be totally cool, everyone still loves you, and I have to go into hiding. What the hell?
Right?
So pissed off.
Yep.
I hope she just tears him a new one.
Yep.
Metaphysically speaking. To be clear.
Tears him a new universe?
Here, let me just help you. You got a couple other holes in here anyway.
Also, I will say, speaking of that, Iron Spider versus Doc Ock is a fight I didn't know I needed in my life.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
It happened, and I was like, this is a fight I needed in my life. And then same thing with Doctor Strange and Spidey in the mirror dimension, because that was just phenomenal. And then he pulls a straight-up hyper-nerdy Peter Parker and wins with geometry. Is the best.
Oh gosh, that was incredible. I'm so bad at math, but as soon as you start doing that, I'm like, you're the best human.
Yeah, he was. Yep. And as soon as you watch the light bulbs go off in Strange's face, he's like, ah, crap.
Yeah.
I forget this kid's a genius.
Yeah, he picked on a nerd. Which, actually, yeah. Now that we're talking about this briefly, probably not very briefly, I'm sorry. It's just a thought I had because, like, with every other superhero, and we've talked about this before, every other superhero has, like, their domain. Like, Captain Marvel is an intergalactic superhero.
Yep.
You know? Tony Stark, he's a global superhero. And then you've got the local superheroes, like Daredevil, and Jessica Jones and the rest. And Spider-Man, from what I'm gathering now, thinking about all this and talking about, he's like, oh, people are going to forget everything we've done together. He goes from being intergalactic back to local again.
Right.
Which I find really interesting because he doesn't lose those memories of having done those things and having been that kind of hero. But he just doesn't have any of those things at his disposal anymore, which is heartbreaking. He's going to have his own trauma, and he's not going to have anyone to talk to about it.
Right.
At least for a bit. MJ's still wearing his necklace.
Yeah, it's a cool necklace.
Yeah, but there's hope.
Also, in a similar vein, I do really love the way that they handled that with Doctor Strange's reaction to the whole situation, right? Like at first, like early on in the film when he's like messing with Peter and they do the whole back and forth on, you know, call me sir, call me Doctor Strange, call me Steven, whatever, you know. But then I think in that final scene when Peter makes the call to just wipe me out, I like how that was scripted, honestly, with like Steven like actually saying like we'll forget, like he because it's a moment of him admitting like, no, despite all the crap that I've given you and all of the chaos that's happened, you know, he has that whole line about I forget you're still just a kid, but then you know, in that moment where he's like, no, but we'll forget about you. And that matters to me. Like, that's the implication in that moment. Right. And I think that was really well done.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I really liked that part particularly, too. And I hope they continue to kind of play around with that, because I think that's an interesting thing they're doing with Tom Holland's Spider-Man, is how much he means to the other characters in the MCU, right? Like that they've played around with Tony and with Happy and now with Strange, like how much they've all kind of gone through together. And then, you know, he like either they lose him or he loses them, kind of thing. And I think that's an interesting tension in his character.
Yeah.
If you guys have listened to this, we would love to hear your feedback.
If you listen to this, I don't know how you're getting this message.
Watch the film.
I just skipped to the end.
Like, I only listened
to the last 5 minutes of this podcast.
That have the end credits.
MinMaxPod@gmail.com. MinMaxPod on all the socials except Reddit, where we're /u/MinMaxPodcast. 773-789-9369 is the voicemail number for voicemails 3 minutes or less. Anything longer than that, you can send the audio file to the email. You can also text that number, for the record. If you'd rather not call in and you just want to text, that's a thing you can do, too.
One might say I'm a credit sommelier.
Uh-huh. I'm an Alan H. Bowers on Twitter. Ashley's at DEETEE _ K. Kyle's at Stainbrook Kyle. And until next week, we'll see you guys later.